Welcome to AI Having a Clue. I am tech novice George Butler.
And I'm AI expert James Chandler.
And today it's time for part two in the stories that formed the AI wars: Elon Musk versus Sam Altman. Next week on the podcast, by the way, A Normal Service returns.
Very good.
The latest in the world of AI news, guests, etc., etc. But today it's the second part in our deep dive to one of the most compelling and fascinating stories in tech. We talk a lot about the AI wars, and there is no battle greater than Sam Altman and Elon Musk, the minds behind OpenAI and Grok. James, in the first part of this story, it was quite insightful, I thought, to look back and find out a little bit more about who Sam Altman is and kind of what led him to starting this groundbreaking company.
And so much is known about Elon Musk, so much is talked about, so much is written. We feel like we kind of know everything that he's about. But we do go back and look at some of the early days with Elon, his upbringing in South Africa, his purchase of PayPal, how that was sold to eBay, and then how he started this whole portfolio of business, everything from SpaceX to Neuralink, and of course, XAI, and how Grok has spun out of that.
We've only heard half the story so far, the formation of OpenAI, the fallout of Elon Musk and Sam Altman, but there is a whole lot of story still to tell. And to help us tell that story, we welcome back from the media leader, the brilliant journalist, Jack Benjamin. So we're halfway through this incredible story here with the media leaders, Jack Benjamin. We left things in the previous episode with Sam Altman. Now, he was on top of the world following the launch of ChatGPT in 2022, running OpenAI single-handedly after Elon Musk had kind of split from the organization. Now, in March 2023, following the launch of Chat, Sam Altman was touring the world, kind of promoting this new product. And it was at this point where Elon Musk starts to question artificial intelligence.
The question is the speed at which it's being developed. So if you remember, this is when more than 1,000 people and Musk, I think Musk was probably the highest profile person on this letter, they called for an immediate pause to AI development for at least 6 months, just over concerns of the pace of the development, lack of guardrails, the opacity of some of these models. I mean, even the developers of these AI systems, they didn't necessarily understand exactly what they were creating. So there was a, to bring in the safety issue again, Musk is ostensibly like really concerned. Of course, he's also no longer in OpenAI either, so he's able to voice these concerns a little bit. Just to quote from the letter briefly, they said,
"Recent months have seen AI labs locked in an out-of-control race to develop and deploy ever more powerful digital minds that no, not even their creators, can understand, predict, or reliably control."
And the author specifically cited Sam Altman as a reason for the call to pause, because Altman had previously raised this issue himself, that at some point it may be important to get independent reviews before starting to train future systems.
So this kind of public call to pause OpenAI happens, and the repercussions are quite significant. We're going to get onto that in a second, but this is the story of Sam Altman and Elon Musk. And last episode, we found out a little bit about Sam Altman and how he grew up, where he came from, and his early days, which led into OpenAI. And I do think it's important to kind of tell Elon Musk's story, because he's a very polarizing figure. He has a very interesting background, and it certainly led to where we are today in him being one of the most influential figures, like him or loathe him, in the world. So, I mean, Jack, growing up, Elon Musk, what was his childhood like?
Well, he grew up in South Africa. There's been a lot of reporting around the family situation was really bad, abusive father, lots of siblings. There are other people that their entire job is to report on Elon Musk. And so certainly I would point you to either their books or their articles or their podcasts to learn a little bit more about the deep dive into Musk's background. It's worth considering also that his family moved to South Africa from Canada around the apartheid era because they really liked that system for themselves, which says a lot about, I think, Elon's current politics and predisposed notions of his worldview. But, you know, he talked about, I think on Joe Rogan, he was really picked on as a kid. He was definitely nerdy, really into science fiction. He is on the spectrum. He's been public about that. So he's always just a bit of an odd kid. And by the time he comes to the States, he's looking similar to Sam Altman in many ways, just 10 years, 15 years earlier. He's sort of an entrepreneur starting in the dot-com boom. A couple of his early projects get bought, and then ultimately he ends up founding X.com, believe it or not. he always had an obsession with that name, that was acquired by what was yet to be known as PayPal.
So he is one of the kind of the founders behind PayPal.
He's part of the PayPal mafia, yeah.
Did you say the PayPal mafia?
That's what they're known as, yeah.
Yeah, you got Peter Thiel's in there.
Peter Thiel. It's really interesting how all these guys are interconnected. Basically, of all of the dot-com boom companies, like PayPal was the most sort of successful in the long term in terms of the guys who they took their money from when PayPal was sold to eBay in 2002, and they ended up founding all of these venture capital firms. And Musk in 2002 also takes that money and founds SpaceX.
So Musk is—he's young. He's just been part of the formation of PayPal, the PayPal mafia, as I now know. He was clearly incredibly rich at the time. What was driving him to do more, and what kind of followed from the sale of PayPal?
I think he had a notion that he was like the most important guy in the world. He had certain missions. He felt like he wanted to sort of save humanity or bring humanity into its next era. He's always had these very lofty ambitions, even back then. And so I think the idea with SpaceX was he wanted to put humans on Mars. He wants to then build a company that can ultimately do that through a sort of vertically integrated rocket launches and satellites and everything to do with space. And this, keep in mind, this is like space had sort of just begun to be open to be privatized in the first place.
So obviously Tesla followed, James.
Yeah, and this is the thing with Musk that you kind of have to look at. He, just the way his brain works and his approach, he kind of likes big problems. So, you know, Tesla, founding a company that effectively is going to solve cars that pollute the environment, SpaceX sending rockets to space, companies like Neuralink. Like, he's kind of got this big picture interest. He's not buying little businesses that are kind of at the start of it. And let's not forget, he didn't found Tesla. He joined Tesla and, you know, later became CEO. So he has this kind of knack at looking at these big problems. You know, the whole Twitter thing was all around the kind of the town square, and, you know, he was going to be the savior of freedom of speech. So he does have these kind of big, sometimes quite wild and meaty things that he kind of wants to solve on our behalf, which I guess is nice of him.
He's just kind of So look, he is this incredibly intelligent and, as you say, driven figure, where you could argue kind of money is important to him, but solving these big world issues maybe is his top priority. He joins OpenAI. He forms it with Sam Altman. He then leaves, departs. We covered that last time in reasonably dramatic fashion. But he's not done with the AI space yet, is he?
No, he's not. So not only does he write this letter in 2023 saying maybe OpenAI is going too fast, in the background, he's also developing a direct competitor. And he ends up launching xAI in July of 2023, which is basically the same idea as OpenAI, for profit. We want to be developing a similar sort of large language model. And at launch, he said the startup would be, quote, pro-humanity, and that it would help us avoid the prospect of a, quote, unquote, Terminator future. Musk, of course, ever the marketer, and sort of uses this insane language around, like, I'm trying to save the world from AI apocalypse. Here's my version.
So, at the time in March 2023, this massive open letter is released. Musk's name's right at the top. He's telling the world that AI development needs to be paused. And at the same time, James, well, he's actually developing AI. Was he saying this for the good of humanity, or was he just trying to claw back some competitive advantage lost?
It's pretty obvious. You mentioned in the part before, I mean, the guy does love money. You know, he still is, as we record this, the world's richest man. You know, that's no accident. Yeah, he is driven. You know, he does have these big causes. He loves being rich. You know, this guy has just sold one of his companies to the other company to make himself, I think it's the first $1 trillion business deal that's kind of gone through. So he's also very good at the kind of optics and the body language. You know, he knows the right things to say. He convened 1,000 people to write an open letter about how awful AI could possibly be for humanity, whilst at the same time doing it. So, you know, he can have these kind of multiple agendas that he can balance. But yeah, it's kind of no surprise that he's gone off and done that, and it's flying right in the face of OpenAI.
Well, Sam Altman clearly thought he was on top of the world at the start of 2023 with ChatGPT's release. This open letter was pretty bad, but Jack, what followed was a lot worse.
That's right. In November, OpenAI's board announced they'd decided to remove Altman as CEO. And this came as, I remember this came as a really big shock to everyone. Greg Brockman, who was also a founder, he was also removed from the board. Mira Murati was named interim CEO at the time.
So the big question is, why was he fired?
Well, the board said the decision followed a quote-unquote deliberative review process that concluded that he was not consistently candid in his communications with the board, hindering its ability to exercise its responsibilities. Quote, the board no longer has confidence in his ability to continue leading OpenAI.
James, was this a hostile decision made by the board, or did it kind of fit with the wider business at the time?
Well, there's a structure thing here. I mean, to have a board of four voting directors is pretty small for, I mean, it doesn't give you much. Any succession fans listening to this will actually see it's all about the numbers. If you want to get rid of Logan Roy, you've got to have the numbers. Boards are typically a little bit bigger. You'd have between maybe 10 and 15 people who can vote on that. And the reason you do that is you dilute the risk because four, pretty easy to agree and to get rid of. Just on that language, the not consistently candid is kind of interesting. You know, is that because they felt he didn't share stuff with them? Was he selective in what he shared? Had he sort of moved things ahead without giving the board visibility? I mean, there could be all number of things here, right?
Per a subsequent Reuters report, apparently just before Altman's exile, several staff researchers wrote a letter to the board warning that a powerful AI discovery had been made by the company that could maybe threaten humanity. This was sort of the language they were using, and that was just one factor among several other grievances. One former board member, Helen Toner, explained the board's rationale as Altman had withheld information, including by not giving advanced warning of the launch of ChatGPT, which is kind of crazy. That was the first consumer product. And two executives had also reported, quote unquote, psychological abuse from Altman. They say they had documentary evidence to support that claim. That's not come to light publicly as far as I know. So, and I'm sure Altman also denies that. So there were a lot of potential issues.
You can imagine the board meeting where he gets dragged in. What's this thing you're launching? Oh, ChatGPT, have I not told you about that? Oh no, it's gonna be big. It's gonna just dominate.
It's our new thing.
Did I?
Oh, we were meant to CC you in the email.
Yeah, it's out next week. Yeah.
No, it's gonna be good. I think people might like it. Crazy.
Awkward.
Crazy. So I mean, it's quite a feat getting fired from your own company. What did the stakeholders, what did the employees at OpenAI, what did the investors, the other investors, what did they make of this at the time, Jack?
Well, they didn't like it so much. Three senior researchers resigned from the company in protests basically immediately. Elon Musk, for what it's worth.
Yeah, come on, what did Elon think?
He advocated for the board to be transparent in its removal. He was at the New York Times Dealbook Summit when he was asked about that. And he said he had mixed feelings for Altman, and he called the turmoil troubling and warned against its sort of for-profit turn. That was sort of his own spin on it. But it's interesting. Basically, the company rallied around Altman, and so did the investors. So one day after Altman being sort of fired, he's already rumored to be returning. Investors Microsoft and Thrive Capital both want him back. It's, you know, one day later, negotiations for Altman to return fall through. They bring in Emmett Shear, former co-founder and CEO of Twitch. He's named interim CEO for a couple days. Just 2 days later, and this is sort of the big one, Microsoft intervenes. CEO Satya Nadella says that Altman and Brockman as well would both be joining Microsoft.
Yeah.
And they would be leading a new advanced AI research team. And so this kind of essentially forces OpenAI into being like, stealing our Microsoft, our investor, is stealing our CEO and presumably loads of people that would be willing to follow him and taking over OpenAI. So it's a bit of a threat. If OpenAI wants to retain any level of power, they need to sort of come to the table again. And 738 of OpenAI's 770 employees signed an open letter stating that they would quit if Altman wasn't restated after this.
And there's an interesting thing around the board, not just because it's a small board of four people. I mean, Microsoft were good to probably be more than a billion at this point, right, in terms of, you know, the highest investor by a long shot didn't have voting rights on that board. And you can't help but think that Satya Nadella, had he been sat there and had a vote, wouldn't have joined kind of these other four, wouldn't have made any difference. But he was pretty exposed, Sam Altman. And yeah, I remember seeing that news that he was going to basically hire him. And then everyone said, well, we're going to go as well. Effectively, just twisting the arm. I mean, they had nowhere to go.
Yeah. One day later, they're back.
We talk about a succession story plot. I mean, it really is brought to life. I mean, the drama of the boardroom. I'm sure they will be making films about that tale one day.
So, if you decided to leave, I'd come with you. You know that.
Oh, Molly.
If they kicked you out, I'd come.
Do we not CC him in?
You're launching another podcast. You gotta tell me about
what? Oh yeah, it's going to be great. You're going to love it.
Microsoft's investing.
Jackson, this is great.
I'm part of the reconstructed board, which they did, by the way. They did reconstruct the board.
So they reconstructed the board, and how did it change when that happened?
Brett Taylor, who co-created Google Maps and was the CTO of Facebook and co-CEO of Salesforce, he comes in as chair. Larry Summers comes in. Larry Summers, the guy who's at Harvard and also Treasury Secretary, I think is the right term in the U.S. Right. under Clinton. Also closely tied to Jeffrey Epstein. Later resigns in 2025. Funny how Epstein's around. We haven't even mentioned this, but the connections between so many of the men that we've mentioned with Jeffrey Epstein that we've just found out in the past few months. Mm. Larry Summers is one of them. He's pointed to the board. And I think one board member is retained, but it remains a small board.
Yeah.
So it's quite a shift and a hugely dramatic decision, which I guess backfires massively on the board at OpenAI. And whilst this is all going on, he's remaining fairly coy about his true feelings on Sam Altman and what's going on there. And instead, he's channeling his focus into XAI, which we've discussed about already. So during this time, how's the development of XAI going? And you know, what's their mission there? And does it differ to what Sam Altman is doing at OpenAI?
The mission broadly is the same in terms of, it's sort of going back to when Musk was involved with OpenAI in the first place. The mission is purportedly, we want to be really great for humanity and develop these AI tools, and we want to do it in a safe way. And XAI is supposedly doing that. Of course, the product that it eventually goes to market with ultimately ends up being Grok. Mm-hmm. That's its sort of version of a large language model. And as we've seen, especially with reporting over the past couple months, not having a great impact on humanity. In fact, having about as far the exact opposite of an impact as you could imagine in terms of the chatbot being used to generate child sexual abuse material and nudes and ruining a number of women's lives. Mm. So that's a long way of saying, supposedly they were saying they were developing this. In the end, they were sort of developing that.
What would you say is the big differences between OpenAI and XAI, if there indeed are many?
Well, I remember Elon actively was positioning it as a rival to OpenAI. So he was kind of just riding off the coattails there. I mean, he would say that the difference being is that because it's connected to, you know, Twitter, what became X, it has that kind of big distribution built in, which made it different. You know, he's made no secret of the fact that he wants to build this kind of everything app in X, like some of the things that you see in China. You know, it does everything for you. It pays bills, you hire taxis, it gets deliveries done. You know, that's what he wants to create. So it's a sort of a stacking on top of stuff that he'd already have, whereas OpenAI is effectively ChatGPT, which is the LLM, and some bits that have spun off the end of that.
I would add, crucially, that Musk's interest in controlling media narratives, and I mean, part of the reason why he bought Twitter in the first place was to own the means of distribution for what is a massive social platform, and remains so, despite many people leaving the platform. So building AI into that you have not only control over the platform's algorithm, but also the algorithm that goes into the AI, you can really have a lot of control over how conversation is dictated on that platform. So I think AI also plays a role. Grok plays a role in that, in the sense of, they've developed Grokipedia because they think Wikipedia, which is one of, somehow, it's become one of the most reliable sources of information when I used to get, docked if I cited Wikipedia on an essay. He's come up with, apparently that's too woke for them, quote unquote. Yeah. So he's come up with his own version using AI. So it's about creating this sort of secondary reality that he can control.
Mm. Clearly, ChatGPT is the dominant player in the LLM space. But I suppose you could argue that Grok has made up some ground, especially if you kind of look at where things were back in 2022, 2023, when it was brought to life compared to where ChatGPT was at the time. Grok has made up some space in the kind of AI war battle here.
I don't know about comparative numbers. I mean, he's lost a lot of ad revenue for X, I can tell you that much. There will be people who agree, and align themselves with Elon Musk's view of the world, who will feel far more comfortable getting their results from Grok than they would ChatGPT, and will buy into this whole kind of woke, it's too left wing, it's too liberal, whatever, he might say Sam Altman is. So there will be people who gravitate towards that. I think disturbingly, they saw huge amounts of uplift in user numbers over the kind of bikinifying bit. People kind of flock to it to do it. So there is a sense of people going there. But to Jack's point, you're reading something on X. You then can at Grok to check the validity of what you're reading. And the algorithm that's sort of giving you that is also giving you the answer. You're in this very odd kind of reality.
I think it's widely seen as the least trustworthy large language model.
And, over these subsequent years of kind of Grok becoming more of a popular product and ChatGPT obviously running away with its dominance, the war of words between Sam Altman and Elon Musk, well, it's just got hotter and hotter, right?
That's right. So this is when you start to get lawsuits in. Involved. So we're in 2024, beginning of 2024. Elon Musk sues OpenAI and Sam Altman. He accuses them of breaching contract by putting profits and commercial interest ahead of public good as it was originally founded as a nonprofit. He sort of says OpenAI has been transformed into a closed source de facto subsidiary of the largest tech company in the world, Microsoft. The New York Times reports that in a message sent to OpenAI employees, Altman said he was confused by Musk's argument that building AI for the benefit of humanity was at odds with building a business. I think some people actually probably don't share that. Probably some people disagree with Altman there. But regardless, a couple months later, OpenAI then countersues. Musk then drops his suit and then files another lawsuit. So it's this weird lawfare that's going on, but it's definitely a ratcheting up from just sort of making public comments or complaints or posting on Twitter about his views on OpenAI into actually taking legal action.
Is this purely about mission? Is there money involved here? Is it just the fact that Elon's a bit upset that he's not in the helm and running the business?
It's impossible to be in Elon Musk's head. I don't think I would want to be there. However, I think there's multiple things happening at once. So he has a competitor, direct competitor, XAI. So there's a business case for anything I can do to slow down or bother OpenAI's leadership, make it really costly for them to, have legal fees. That could be a business benefit. He probably also has taken it a little personally that he didn't win the power struggle back in the day, in what was this, 2017, before he left. And years later, ChatGPT and OpenAI are actually doing quite well, and he's still sort of in that marketplace.
And don't forget, his oxygen is in the attention economy. It's easy to pick up the phone and post out a tweet about, something. They got into a big spat around, he was attacking Sam Altman around, I think, child safety. Sam Altman then bit back and said something about safety of Tesla cars. I mean, it's just kind of like it's this real tit for tat. I'm not quite sure who wins, but it's just this kind of oxygen that certainly fuels Elon. He just kind of craves attention, and he can get it in an instant by calling him out on something.
Or you mentioned fueling him. Is there an element that there's a danger to poking the bear, so to speak, and that kind of being fuel to his fire?
It depends where it's going to kind of go. I mean, there's some interesting things going on with OpenAI. They have this part of the business. They've done a team up between Jony Ive, who many will know as Steve Jobs' creative brain, right-hand man for many years at Apple. the thought is they're developing this kind of wearable. People think it's kind of like a pendant with no screen, but it's going to be kind of like this AI assistant. You know, there's no doubt Elon will see that kind of stuff, see the rumor thing, and he'll have the engineers kind of working on something. It is this arms race in the truest sense. They're really going at it against one another. The official things from OpenAI, though, well, just in response to the lawsuit, they said that when he was at OpenAI, he was kind of okay with the business making money. You know, he openly said that. There's emails that reference it. And they said that he wanted majority control. They put it to the board. The board didn't want to cede it. He wanted to take it to Tesla. Put it to the board. Board didn't want to do it. They sort of describe as he went off in a huff. You know, these were his red lines. We don't want to go for them. Okay, see you later.
So let's take a little look ahead. We'll get out that magical crystal ball.
Mugs game.
What is next? What's next? It's OpenAI, it's XAI, it's Sam Altman and Elon Musk. What's to come, Jack? What do we know is to come and what do we think is to come?
What we know is to come is there's a trial for these lawsuits actually coming. I believe the date is 27th of April. So we'll see what comes of that. I think there's Musk in some ways has a legitimate grievance, first of all, because after the sort of time period we were just discussing in 2024, OpenAI does propose a restructuring to convert to a capped for-profit company, which it eventually concluded at the end of 2025. So in terms of the argument that Musk is making around nonprofit, for-profit, losing maybe sight of the mission, OpenAI is taking steps to move further away from the sort of original mission, maybe the original vision for the company, because they need money. And I think that speaks to sort of the future for these companies. These companies are in bad shape. Specifically, OpenAI is in bad shape. XAI, it bought X/Twitter because that company was in really bad shape and had a lot of debt. And XAI didn't at the time because everyone was investing in AI. So its valuation was higher, kind of hide the total failure of Musk's Twitter project. And then XAI has now been acquired by SpaceX, which is an even bigger company in space value. It's the exact same. It's like a Russian doll of Elon Musk companies. So for the time being, XAI is probably in a better financial situation because it's now been subsumed by a bigger conglomerate and SpaceX is about to probably IPO, which means that a lot of the debt is going to get transferred onto retail investors. So all these guys can cash out if they want. Basically, the company's probably going to be okay. OpenAI, on the other hand, has a huge business blind spot because of how expensive it is to build out AI infrastructure and how little money that they have been earning relative to the expenditure. And we can get into details around what certain investment banks say. But ultimately, I think OpenAI is actually in a really difficult space in the market now.
You mentioned about the banks and investors. What does that world think of OpenAI?
Not super highly at the moment. OpenAI's CFO, Sarah Friar, said in a blog post that the company made about $20 billion in annualized revenue, which, to be fair, that's more than triple the $6 billion that it was making in 2024. but that's a really small fraction of the total OpenAI will need to gross just to remain in business over the next 3-4 years. The tech giant's partners have reportedly amassed over $100 billion in debt as part of an effort to fund its growth. Altman has made $1.4 trillion in further spending commitments to build out the sort of energy infrastructure required for AI. So there was an analysis that was done by HSBC last autumn that predicted OpenAI still won't be profitable by 2030 due to that high cost, even if its user base grew to encompass 44% of the global population. Keep in mind, there's a lot of the global population that doesn't have internet access still. They also estimated OpenAI would need to raise at least another $270 billion on top of the spending commitments to fund the compute growth plans that it has. And so, I mean, it's such a large number. I mean, it's hard for us to even think about $1 billion, but trillion. And that's just, you're in the red by that much.
Yeah.
And they're making $20 billion a year. Like, that's why they need to get the ad model. Even if they had the greatest ad model on earth, which doesn't sound like they do at the moment, and it'll take them time to build something like that, you're not even scraping the surface that you need to get into the green. So you'll look at what subscriptions are the other opportunity.
Where else do you get cash from?
They could enter the lottery.
That's great.
That's essentially what they're doing.
And they've announced over the recent weeks and months that they are going to be accepting advertisements on their product. Is this the answer to their issues, or is it a drop in the ocean in terms of their financial situation?
I think it really depends. I mean, you can look through the sort of the last decade, lots of businesses said that they would never do it. Netflix said they would never have ads. I mean, BuzzFeed, Jonah Peretti, the founder there, was very, very critical of advertising, never thought they needed it. It came to a point where, you know, if you want to scale, then, you know, the ad model's not a bad one to do it. It's kind of proven, you know, there's advertisers want to spend money, they want to reach people. So, you know, there's kind of no surprise. I think you kind of top out on subscribers. We've talked about this before. There's only so many people in this world who are going to pay you £20 a month to subscribe. And once you kind of hit that ceiling, you know, where are you going to go from there? So maybe the ad model is kind of inevitable. You have to be careful, though, because you can't just bung a load of ads in there very, very quickly to make lots and lots of money. Seductive as it might be, you need to be careful. This is a brand new space for ads. We've not seen it here before. The things people are telling AI, the types of data that it's sucking in, the amount that it knows about you means the ad bit has to be incredibly in tune and almost has to take baby steps to get it right.
And they don't have a whole lot of experience in terms of the staff that they have on hand that have ad experience, right? The company has reportedly struggled to value its advertising inventory, apparently asking for around $60 CPMs. That's the cost per 1,000 views on an ad. That's triple what it costs to advertise on Meta, which is widely seen as like the premier digital ad platform by a lot of especially smaller businesses. And equally, OpenAI is not offering the same level of detailed information about its users. They've said that they need to protect a lot of the information. I mean, frankly, I should say that's probably the right move, given how much detailed information they would have about a user, whether or not OpenAI would then subsequently roll that back. And there's a whole privacy implication issue. Is OpenAI going to be treated, going to be regulated? I mean, there are some serious problems with its ad model. It is fledgling, so I don't want to write it off. They've built out an ads integrity team to apparently work on some of these issues. But I think the perception in the market at the moment is negative. And the one thing I would add is you have so many competitors in the market. So what's to stop any user from saying, like, F that, I don't want to have ads in my AI. I don't trust an AI that's going to maybe sell me a product psychologically a little bit. They might recommend something underhand. I'm just going to go to Anthropic. And that's why they paid, you know, several million dollars for Super Bowl ads. Part of the issue is there's so many competitors in the space that if OpenAI collapses or if people don't want to use it anymore, we don't like the product anymore because it's been inshitified, dare I use that word, there are so many options to move to.
So a big question, which I think kind of draws a close to the story. When the history of AI is written, will it be the story of Sam Altman and his OpenAI system, or will it be about Elon Musk and his ex-AI rebellion?
I think there's probably room for two narratives.
Have you ever seen Star Wars?
I can't see kind of Elon crashing and burning. SpaceX, he's got this portfolio of businesses. As Jack made the brilliant point on SpaceX, it's kind of his safety net. If something's failing, you bung it into the thing that's kind of working as gold, the big government contracts, it kind of be okay. So I think there's going to be an Elon narrative, and he's always going to be attached to OpenAI, and he's always going to be probably quite a vocal critic. Then I think there's a kind of there's an OpenAI Sam Altman era type narrative, and that's going to be interesting to see where he goes. The ads route's going to be interesting for him. I think the kind of the scrutiny from regulators is going to get quite interesting because, you know, part of the almost the problem with being the biggest and being out there, you do attract a lot of scrutiny, and you're the one. You know, Google have been through this for years and years and years. You know, Meta have kind of been through this. Amazon, lots of the big tech players, they're kind of battle hardened with the regulators. They've got lobbying efforts. They're doing another thing. Open a little bit greener on this, and they are kind of seen as the front runner. You know, they're big and they're in the sort of the language that we use around using chat. but that means they're a big target as well. So I think there's probably two narratives, and I'm really delighted in not really answering your question.
Jack, final word?
Neither of them, I think, are ultimately going to be... They're going to be very important figures in the story that we're telling, you know, 10, 20 years from now about the development of this tech. But try and beat Google, man. That's where everyone is. I mean, people already used Google search, and there's all these implications I talked about on the other episode I was on, that AI search is harming a lot of the ecosystem of certainly publishing. But that's where users are and have been, and the better those tools are, and keep in mind DeepMind is owned by Google.
Yeah.
I think that's a big player. Meta, due to its scale, might be a bigger player than we are maybe giving it credit for, although I don't know anyone that's used Meta AI in any of the products that they've rammed it into. Anthropic is really important. Claude is being used for vibe coding by almost everyone at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, these things, it'll be a horse race. But ultimately, given OpenAI's really difficult business model and Elon Musk's complete lack of self-control, I actually don't see either of these companies as especially leaders going forward, but they will force themselves to be relevant, I'm sure, in the conversation.
So what I'm hearing is essentially we're talking Obi-Wan Kenobi and Darth Maul here in the story of Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker. Jack. Jack, we are going to end things there. That was so fascinating, so insightful. James, I've learned a lot.
Yeah, you kind of know what you know about Elon and you so little about Sam Altman. And actually, when you piece it all together, it's such a kind of a melting pot of where it goes next. I thought the most fascinating thing was Jack talking about the financial state of both companies and where they go next. I mean, even talking about this in 6 months, it's going to be entirely different, but I thought that was really interesting.
And the kind of the bombshell at the end for me was that Jack doesn't think either of these two giant leaders, giant businesses, are going to be the winners of the AI wars. And obviously time will tell on that front, but it's certainly fascinating to see their journey so far. Jack, we really appreciate all the effort, all the time, and all the investigating into this story. We're going to say a big thank you to Team AI Haven't a Clue, led marvellously by the brilliant Molly Carter. We'll be back next time. Normal service returns with the latest from the world of AI. But James, for now,
stay curious.